It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to Roto Grinders today. I'm Jordan Cooper, aka Blender Ed, Blender HD. If you want to follow me on Twitter. And it's Tuesday, April 30th. We're taking a look at the big 12 game MLB slate today. We got a ton of baseball today. We got other games even that aren't on the main slate. We can talk props. We can talk pick 'em. We can talk anything you want. Hit that thumbs up button. You know how much I like the thummy thumbs. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the notification bell to always know when we go live. Join with me here early in the morning. Right, getting up nice and early here. Sometimes we force people to, like, okay, you're gonna have to wake up and you have to deal with me. It's Derek Carty, purveyor of the bat projections, which you can find here on Roto Grinders. And as I always say, I don't want you to get them, because if you're taking props and you have the bat projections, you probably already got 700 things in today. And if you don't get them in time, they'll move and you get less of a return. So Carty, I've been using the bat projections pretty much exclusively since the start of the season. And other than the past couple of days, I have been sick. So I've been out of action. My first month is not so bad. I made a couple of mistakes on the hitting stuff, right? So that took away a little bit of my ROI, but right now my April MLB ROI is 3.84%.
Yeah, it's not bad, especially for the start of the year.
Right. Last year it was better overall, but that's over the course of the whole season. But 3.84% is a pretty decent ROI, being that, you know, I put in like 150 bets and several thousand dollars a day. So when you turn that out, like in raw money, ain't that bad for you know what, you know, you,
no.
I hit him overnight. You have your tomorrow's projections, best kept secret. People wait in the morning and I go, nope, I'll take advantage of overnight stuff. Wake up in the morning, punch some stuff out, and then go on with the rest of my day. So it's 11 in the morning. There's still stuff available on the board that has a value, but let me tell you, like, even though it's value now, it was better value 2 hours ago or 4 hours ago. So those profits, you know, when you could get something at like minus 105 and then it's still an edge at like minus 125, like that extra couple of percentage points, like over time, it like makes that really helps your ROI.
Yeah, it really, really does. Yeah, no, I mean, 3% in April is great. I'm up, I think, even more than that, which the last two Aprils I've been down after April. So I'm very happy just to have a positive April, get off on a good foot this year and pick up from there.
Do you think that, in years past, obviously projection systems, in the beginning of the season, we know less information, like we're not sure how the ball's going to react. We tend to get a sense of more of the weather, right? Because it's not as offensive early in the season. But I would say that in the past two Aprils, you'd be right. I think last April, I actually was down in April and then came back strong in May and June. Yeah. Very much so. But do you... All this talk about the pitching this year with the injuries and the... Obviously, we've been working with the pitch clock for a season or two now. And I've been saying this for DFS as well. And it's kind of weird. I'm going to say this on a slate where relatively we actually have pretty decent pitching today, that there really isn't any, like, Is there any pitcher? I mean, we'll talk about Freddy Peralta today. Like today's, I look at today's pitching slate and go, wow, and this is a pretty decent pitching slate. But I still come back to the fact that I look at some of these names and I go, I wouldn't be shocked if this guy gave me negative three. I mean, like, it's like, yeah, it doesn't feel as if, it feels like hitting is down, but it's not like pitching is good either.
Yeah, I kind of have the same impression. Part of that's the injuries, and we have so many just of the elite arms that just aren't pitching right now. But the run environment is down too. So yeah, it's kind of a weird dynamic.
Right. Cause I always think of the slates, they, okay, I want to take DeGrom. I want to take Scherzer. I want to take all the high end options. Right. Or like Verlander, being that if he was actually Verlander, you know, like some, yeah, of these people. And then I look and I go, oh, okay. Well, feels like I could take like so many different pitchers. And I look at the offenses and I go, oh, like sometimes you have the slate is like, I'm not sure if this team can this team score four runs? I'm not even sure. Yeah. And it's kind of a weird dynamic where sometimes you're just happy to get like 18 points out of a pitcher. And then sometimes you're just happy about getting five or six runs out of your stack. It makes for a very, it's a weirder dynamic, especially on the DFS side, because I think what it does is it does one of two things. You can look at it two ways. One of two ways. I don't know which side you look at it as. We have 12 games today. The totals are, I mean, we have one team that is like slightly over a five total. That's the Astros. Like just a 5.03. We have a couple in the high fours, right? Now we have a whole bunch of teams in the threes. Obviously, those are the teams that we're kind of like targeting pitchers against. But typically in the past, you know, even in the end of April, we'd say, well, there's 24 teams playing today. One of these teams is going to, even if it's off the bullpen, is going to probably going to score 10 runs or something. There's going to be a stack that you need to have at some point that you're going to want to have. That's going to be owned at least 2 or 3% that is worthwhile. That's going to be the winning GPP lineup. And then you look at the pitching and you go, there's going to be one of these pitchers. One of these pitchers is going to put up 30 points, 28. Some cheap pitcher is going to put up 20 out of the blue. Some expensive pitcher is going to put up 36, you know, seven innings, 11 strikeouts. A lot of times it's neither. And that gets very, you could think in terms of, well, if neither happens as often, it makes it more important for the times that it does happen. Like if there's going to be a 10-run team on the slate, it's way more important on the slate where most of the teams are only scoring 4 or 5 runs.
Yeah.
Or most pitchers are only putting up 15 points and you're getting the 30-point pitcher. But then you could also say that since it's not happening as often, that it's not as important at all. And it's just more important to get teams that put up enough. Get up pitchers that put up enough and don't run into landmines. I don't know which side are you on. You're more likely to like, we take a look at pitching today, for instance. We have pitchers that seem safe, right? You look and you go, I don't think they're going to get blown up. And then there are pitchers where you go, okay, this guy, John Gray at 7,300 against the Nationals. And you go, this guy could go out and strike out 10 guys in 6 innings. This guy could go out and the Nationals could score 6 runs in 4. Like you look at this and you go, well, for 7,300, the instance where John Gray strikes out 10 is worth way more to me than like playing like Sean Manaea against the Cubs and going, he'll probably get 15 points. Right. Right. Something like that. Or Alex Wood or a Logan Webb, for instance, rather than like bad projections have Luis Castillo against the Braves as the, like the best point per dollar value. Let me just tell you, I'm not a big fan of picking on the Braves. right. So like this seems like a spot where Castillo could go out and do really well. Could also go out 3.1 innings pitched, 4 walks, 8 runs. The median, right, the mean, maybe 20. I'm not confident of, I'm confident like 30 or zero. Right. How do you view these types of situations? Do you feel like in DFS you should be thinking more classically and let me go out, get these strikeout pitchers if they give up runs? That's just the nature of DFS GPPs, and that's the way it is. And the same thing for bats, where I'm just going to go and I'm going to play the Astros, and if they screw me again, they just screw me again. I'm not going to take the White Sox, right? And just hope.
Yeah. So it's kind of an interesting dynamic this year, like you said, because of the scoring environment, because we don't have those high end pitchers really. I think you are going to see a number of days where you're going to see winning lineups and GPPs that, you know, don't have a team that scored 10 runs or a pitcher that scored 30, because like there's just fewer of them. But like you said, on the days that they happen, those are going to be the winning lineups. So for me personally, I think I would play more in that direction where, okay, fine, I'm going to lose a little more often maybe because I'm not going to hit those high ceilings as frequently as I used to. But on the days that I do hit them, it's really going to separate me. It's going to make up for all the losses. And, you know, I still think that's the optimal way to play, the most plus EV way to play.
And that's pretty much the way that I play. I mean, but yeah. Plenty of people look and they go, I feel uncomfortable clicking on some of these names or some of these stacks. I move on to the next day. That's why we have like 200 days of playing MLB DFS.
Yeah. It's a long season. You can afford some losses in there.
So I think on today's slate, people will have an easy time clicking on Freddie Peralta today. Is there a reason not to? He's 10,000. He's at home facing the Rays. I don't think price is an option. I mean, I don't see this as the type of slate where we don't have cores. We don't have some like 5K average player stack that you like. You have to play because they have a 6+ total. I mean, you could, to me, I mean, if you wanted to pay up at pitching twice and pay like 18K plus, I think that's doable today. Is there a reason not to play for Freddie Peralta? Or is that like, I feel like people, that's going to, even though Freddie Peralta ain't like some like low variance pitcher either. I just feel like, even though we have a good amount of names on this slate that you go, okay, I can play this pitcher. I can play this pitcher. But out of all of them, I mean, I feel like you just plug in Freddie Peralta and he'll be the highest owned pitcher out of all these pitchers, but it's probably warranted.
Yeah, he's clearly the top guy. You know, he's arguably the most talented on the slate, you know, certainly has a better matchup than a guy like Castillo or Webb, who might be as talented. Like you said, there's not a whole lot on the hitting side that like you have to prioritize in terms of high end spends. The matchup's pretty good. His stuff has been improved this year. The only thing is he's just going to be high owned. Like everyone's going to see this and a lot of people are going to play him. So, you know, lineups, not players. That's what you always say. So you can play Freddie Peralta. But I don't think you have to play Freddie Peralta in every lineup. Like you can definitely build good lineups without Freddie Peralta, but he is clearly the top guy.
But there are a lot of pitchers I see here in the bat projections right now. This is obviously 11 a.m. without, you know, with the projected starting lineups, not the actual, obviously. So there's umpire data possibly later in the day. There's going to be weather movement, you know, slight. I mean, it's probably not going to change stuff that much. I mean, we take a look here. Freddie Peralta, 22, you know, as the, you know, the raw point, you know, mean projection. We got Luis Castillo, we mentioned before, 20. Right. I think that's a little bit higher variance scenario. But there are a lot of these guys, 18, 17, 16, 18.
Yeah, there's plenty of guys that work. Yeah.
Right. So, like, if you're going to play a line, like, Freddie Peralta and Luis Castillo could easily just be, like, Mitch Keller and Ronaldo Lopez. And then you look and you go, Mitch Keller and Ronaldo, no, like, I always have to do a double take when I look at Ronaldo Lopez now because when he was on the White Sox, Like, this is a guy that we stacked against. I mean, like, it's Ronaldo Lopez day. What are we playing? What are we doing? Why is he? I mean, Seattle's a good strikeout lineup, but I mean, it's. I mean, they could get to him. Mitch Keller is someone that I never trust, but he's in Oakland against the A's. Can't get a pretty much better matchup than that. Is it odd for me to say that, like, Freddy Peralta and Luis Castillo sound like much better names than Mitch Keller and Ronaldo Lopez? But from a projection standpoint, they're not that dramatically different from one another.
No, they're really not. Like, Ronaldo Lopez kind of has that reputation for when he was with the White Sox, and, you know, we'd stack against him. He's kind of gotten some of his issues more under control since then. Like, he's gotten better. His control is not as bad as it used to be. His home run issues aren't as bad as they used to be. They're not exacerbated anymore by guaranteed rate field. The run environment now, where home runs are kind of down, you know, kind of plays into his favor as more of a fly ball pitcher. So Lopez is actually like a pretty good pitcher. The matchup is like, okay, there's a pitcher's umpire. There's a good pitch frame and catcher. He's not as sexy a name as Castillo or Webb or anyone, but yeah, like, Lopez works. Mitch Keller is in Oakland against Oakland. So you don't get matchups better than that. So that's fantastic. You have the John Gray thing, like you mentioned, even Manaea. I think Manaea has a little more upside than you credit him for. I think Manaea, like, he has 10 Ks in him. He's even done it this year, hasn't he? He's gotten like 9 or 10 at the start. I think all those guys are fine.
But even like Logan Webb in Boston, that's doable. I'm not a big fan of playing pitchers in Fenway, but I mean, the other thing about GPP play with pitchers is that I'm much more likely to take a shot on a guy that has a leash, right?
Yep.
Like, it's not only that, you know, take a shot, guys that have leashes, guys that have strikeouts. The main primary reason is that even if they get into trouble, they could still get a good score because they could go 6 in. Yeah, they give up 3 runs. But if they're going to strike out 9, I don't care, right? If they're going to go 7 innings, I don't care. It's on the low end. It's, you know, I take a look at like someone like Yu Darvish against Cincinnati.
You can't play Darvish today.
Why can't you play Darvish today?
He's coming back from injury. There's no, I mean, you just mentioned leashes and now you're bringing up Yu Darvish.
Well, right? I'm feeding you. I'm trying something new here, Cardi. I'm trying to not answer my own questions. I'm trying
Yu
to say,
Darvish
hey.
Is coming back from injury. You know, we're probably, he threw a bullpen session on Wednesday. Where they even said, like, or maybe not Wednesday, a few days ago, whenever it was. And they were like, yeah, he didn't even, like, go, like, full steam. Like, and now he's just starting all of a sudden. Like, there's a real chance Darvish goes, like, 3 innings here. But you're certainly not getting 7 or 7 out of him with 10 strikeouts. Like, that's not in the cards for Darvish today.
Well, you have him at a 78 pitch count, and that may be... That even may be aggressive.
That may be aggressive. I haven't seen anything about an actual pitch count on him as much as I've looked so far this morning. That's just the bat's automated projection based on how long he's missed, what he threw in his last start, you know, that kind of stuff.
Are we going to play the guy against the great matchup against the White Sox? We played him last start. The Simeon Woods Richardson guy did pretty well, but the last start he was 4K.
He was 4K he was last game, yeah.
He's 7K now. Even though it's against the White Sox, I mean, is it just that this guy the only reason anyone knows anything about him in DFS is that they priced him at 4K.
Yeah.
In a great match. Wasn't it the same matchup?
It might have been the same matchup.
I think the last time we also faced the White Sox, and he still gave up, I think, 3 runs. Or a bunch of hits or something like, I mean, he got like 14 points or something for 4K, which is great for 4K.
7K, but, not so much. And he is at a disadvantage now that they've seen him, you know, so recently. I don't really think he's super viable today.
Also, he's not a good pitcher.
No, he's not a very good pitcher.
Right. Last thing about pitching before we go over to bats. I'll ask you, this is more of a bat specific question. Okay. And you're going to see how I'm going to frame this around. It's like if you're a bat subscriber and you play MLB DFS every day, there's one pitcher that you're almost guaranteed to be under the field on. And then when he throws 12 strikeouts, right? When you have his under 5.5 strikeouts and he beats that by like 5 strikeouts, and he's already over by the third inning. Like sometimes you just look and you go, when is Cardi going to know? When is he going to know? And then sometimes this guy comes out and gets shelled in 3 innings. And then he's sitting there going, I'm glad I didn't roster 27% this guy. Who is the real Cole Reagans?
I think he's closer to that like dominating guy than the blow up guy. I think the bet was too low on him coming into the year. I actually haven't placed a single under bet on Reagans all year because I kind of suspected the bet was going to be too low on him. He's a guy who last year he got traded, completely changed up who he was as a pitcher. His stuff has just gotten so much better than it was previously. Like he's just a different guy. The bat, it seems like, is finally, after a couple starts now, like catching up and realizing that Reagans is good. When I look at just true talent level for pitchers, he's like in the top 10 or top 15 now in baseball. So like it knows Reagans is good at this point, which is nice. So I'm going to start probably trusting it a little bit more on him. But today, the spot's not that great. I don't know.
How about that with the other guy on the slate that's similar? Hunter Brown was awful. But I played him on the day because the bat tends to like Hunter Brown. And I don't know if it was his last start or it was one of the last starts where he actually pitched. It was like a horrible matchup and he did great. And I had him at like 1% owned. I'm not a big fan of playing pitchers against Cleveland for ceiling. Uh-huh. It's more of a ceiling. Like I don't think the Guardians are that good, but they're not. They don't strike out that much. Right. Yeah. But they really don't have power. It's like, it's the type of team where if you walk one or two guys, like they're probably not hitting a 3-run home run off of you, but they're also the type of team that can hit, like they got 14 hits against you. I mean, like they hit the ball well, they don't strike out that much. He's 6,800 on this slate. I mean, for a point per dollar perspective, I mean, he's going to be low owned and you're able to now pay up for a couple of more bats. I mean, who's the real Hunter Brown?
I think Hunter Brown's a lot closer to the guy we saw last year than the one we've seen so far this year. Like you look at his underlying numbers, his stuff is pretty similar. I think it's just a good amount of bad luck so far. I bet his over outs today, but for DFS purposes, I'm kind of in the camp where there's some other guys in that price range that I think have better upside than Hunter Brown against Cleveland. Cleveland, you know, like the strikeout upside is very limited. I have a hard time seeing a path for him to go to get 30 points.
So you mentioned that you have his over out. So that's over 14.5, right?
14.5. Yeah. So he just has complete five innings, which against a team that is just swinging, they're not going to really drive up his pitch count much unless they BABIP him to death. So I like that, but from a DFS perspective where the strikeouts matter so much, not as much.
And that number has moved significantly. Right now it's minus 160. The best in market is minus 160 on DraftKings. If you got that earlier today, that you got a much better price.
Yeah.
Are there any other pitching props that still have value as of 11:20 in the morning? I mean, I obviously, Cardi, I'm on my second screen. I can see them all because we're both looking at the same projections. But maybe you want to disclose, you know, a couple that you got today that for as a little sneak preview for if people should just get the bat projections and just do this themselves. But sometimes we have to give out a little nibble to people.
Yeah. So Tyler Anderson outs under 17 and a half plus 135. I think there's still a 125 out there now, but that one's really good. Like he's gone seven innings three times this year, but he also has a 181 BABIP. Like he's just being gotten so lucky and so efficient. He's not a guy who goes seven innings. He's not a guy who goes six innings normally. He only did it like in a third of his starts last year. The bat's only projecting about five innings here from today. It's against a good Phillies offense. We're getting a great plus money. So that was one of my favorites of the day was that Tyler Anderson one.
All right. Right now I see it DraftKings at plus 105 under 17 and a half.
I think last I looked, Bet365 was still at 125, but it's fallen. I gave it out on the cover show this morning, so it's definitely fallen at a bunch of books.
Because right. Caesars has it at minus 113. Yeah. So, like, that. I mean, these are dramatic differences. Like, the difference between minus 113 and plus 105 is that's an 11% edge difference. I mean, like,
yeah, it's massive.
Like, don't just use one book and be like, I just use DraftKings. It's like, no, you got to use them all.
Yeah.
You got any K ones that are still around?
I don't think so. The only K I took today was Javier Assad under 4.5 minus 110, but I think that is long gone.
Well, I'll take a look here.
But Assad, yeah, best line right now is minus 125, and there's some minus 150s, minus 160s at most books.
I'm looking to see anything else that's out there. This is why you gotta. I guess Simeon Woods Richardson under 4.5 strikeouts.
That's the one I'd be tempted to take right now. Caesars has minus 125, which projects pretty well, and everywhere else is like minus 150. Pinnacle's minus 187. So yeah, I'm fine getting in there at minus 125.
Right. See, we're both looking at the same screens, right? It's just like okay. Let me click on a couple of things over here. Okay, so let's take a look at obviously there's a decent amount of pitching today, which means that I'm looking at these totals going okay, you got the Diamondbacks, Dodgers, you got the Phillies, you got the Astros, the Rangers, the Twins with high four team totals, but these aren't like I'm looking going, I'm looking at the stack, like the bat stacks projection page, which you can get if you're a bat subscriber. Just looking at like point per dollar and then like what the raw points are. I don't care about like these value, like if I'm going to win a GPP, we could talk about some of these really cheap stuff. The vomit stacks. but as I've said, Cardi, on past shows, I used to be the vomit stack person, but when there's no ace pitching anymore, the value of the vomit stack, like,
that's, right. Like, what are like, you
I don't,
getting?
I don't care. Them? Like, the White Sox go out and put up six runs at the dirt cheap 2K batter pricing. That just meant I left 7K on the table because what pitching might pay? Like,
right.
Like, you don't have, it's not, I'm not playing two 12K pitchers. That dynamic just doesn't exist anymore. So we look here. And it's like all in this mid-range, like there's not that much separation. I mean, Houston obviously has the highest raw projection, but behind them, the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, the Padres, the Phillies, the Twins, all within a couple of points of them. And then even just from a point per dollar value, the Pirates, the Blue Jays, the Brewers, the Giants, the Guardians, the Rangers, even the Royals, I guess, to some extent. Maybe the best team that has the worst matchup is like the Braves, right? Like
yeah,
they have a better raw point than than some of the garbage teams, but they cost like way too much for being up against Luis Castillo. How do you sort this out? Because this feels like a slate where I'm not sure if any singular team is like, even if you're playing single entry, if you're playing with three max, the smaller field stuff, I'm not even sure if like, that's all, everyone's going to play the Astros against Carrasco. Like, I think there could easily be five or six teams that end up with around similar ownership.
Yeah, that's kind of how the bat has it projected too. You know, there's kind of a, there's not really any team that's like so great. You know, there's no teams that you kind of have to, you know, worry about the ownership with. It's kind of a slate, I think, where you don't have to get too cute. Just kind of mix and match the top teams, and that's kind of all you have to do. You know, your Astros, Diamondbacks, Phillies, Dodgers, Padres, Twins, I think, is kind of that top tier. If you want to mix in a couple of those cheap, you know, White Sox type guys, but again, I don't think you have, like you said, I don't think you have to do the full stack with them. I kind of think that's it.
And like some of these teams aren't that cheap anymore. Like the Twins, I was playing a bunch of this month because, you know, they had some of these, you know, the prices were down in the 3Ks, some of these guys. But now, like, you know, they've adjusted Julianne's price, right? Jeffers is now up to 4,400, right? Buxton, I don't know what's going on with him. Is Buxton dead? What's going on with Byron Buxton?
I wish I knew anything about what was going on with Byron Buxton. The dude is like just a total enigma at all times.
this is a guy. If you've been playing DFS for a while, this is a guy. If you've only been playing in the past like 2 or 3 years, you probably view Byron Buxton as the $5,800 outfielder that typically bats in the middle of the order. But I remember Byron Buxton from 2017, 2018, where he's the 3K nine hitter on the Twins, right? Like the guy that like strikes out way too much, but if he gets on base, he could steal two bases, but he could also have some pop. But yeah. like, do you play the ninth hitter on the Twins, even though he's 3K? He's very similar. I mean, obviously different profile than a Billy Hamilton. Of like the guy that projects really well because his outcomes are so bimodal that when he's good, like when he makes contact with the ball, he could have the highest fantasy score on the entire slate. Problem is that there are days where he just doesn't like make contact with the ball, and you're just sitting there going, what is this guy think? What is this guy doing? Right. And then you also don't have the benefit of the plate appearances because you're taking like some home team's ninth hitter and you're like, oh, this guy may even only just get three at bats.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there are a lot of guys, and we were saying that until, I mean, did Anthony Rendon like bail us out or something like that? He started the year as like, why does this guy exist? And then he actually righted the ship.
Then he was good, and then he got hurt.
Then of course he gets hurt, right? I mean, what else is new, right? So like compared to the thing is that pitching is not like super expensive, right?
Right.
Like you could play even if you want to go down and play like John Gray or Hunter Brown, like you could fit in Peralta with like any team on the slate. If you're paying up, right? I'm going to put you on the spot, Cardi, because people are going to have to make choices. We got the Dodgers. Obviously the Dodgers are insanely expensive from the top of the order. Betts at 6,600, Otani 6,500, Freeman, Smith, Teoscar. I mean, that's extremely expensive. Obviously we rule out the Braves because of the Castillo matchup, but you also got like the Phillies. Schwarber's 55, Trey's 62, Bryce is 59, Bohm is up to 48, Real Muto's up to 5K. The Astros, they're not cheap. Look, Kyle Tucker's 5,800, Altuve, Bregman's up to 4,900. You're not getting like Yiner Diaz cheap anymore or any of this like that. I mean, like, I feel that on a slate, see, I'm going to contradict myself. Right? Before we talked about, like, do you view it as, oh, there may not be any. This could be a slate where there's, even though there's 12 games, that no team scores 8 runs, right? But if some team does score 8 plus runs, you're gonna probably want them, and it's more likely to be some of these expensive teams,
right?
The thing is that if no team scores 8 plus runs, paying for those teams is gonna be nowhere near as worth it. that I'm much more inclined to take shots on more of the mid-priced type of stuff. Like even like a team like Milwaukee against Tyler Alexander, like playing like the righties, like Adames and Hoskins. I mean, it's not like this isn't cheap. $4,400, $4,500 for Hoskins. Gary Sanchez is in the lineup for $3K. Joey Ortiz is cheap at third base, or Owen Miller, or one of these guys. Obviously, platoon situation. You have to.
Yeah, a lot of those guys are probably getting pinch hit for.
Right. But then also, like, even like the Rangers against Mackenzie Gore, some of them are expensive. Semien Seager Garcia, but is Wyatt Langford ever going to happen? Is that guy going to happen at some point?
My answer. He's a rookie. Wyatt Langford was doomed from the start. At least this year. No, he'll be good at some point. But I mean, rookies struggle most of the time in their first look at major league pitching. That's just what you should expect. And for whatever reason, that's not what people actually expect, but that's what happens.
So out of these teams that I mentioned, like on the slate, I mean, are you more likely? I mean, I'm looking for, I mean, obviously I look at the projections, right? But I also take a look at I'd rather take a shot on teams against higher variance pitchers. Do you consider Carlos Carrasco to be a high variance pitcher?
Yes, but also I consider him just to be a bad pitcher, but I think there's plenty of variance for him to be completely terrible and give up 10 runs. Yeah, so.
Because he's not a strikeout pitcher anymore.
No, right? I don't think high variance in the sense that he has that upside really, but I think he definitely has plenty of downside.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I just view Carrasco as the type of guy that if he's off, he just gets hit a bunch. But does he struggle that much with control?
I mean, this year he has.
Okay. Well, that's the key. I like guys that walk people, right? So I'm looking at these teams that I could face. That's why the Twins against Mike Soroka, that's a match made in heaven. It's this guy could walk six guys. I mean, Soroka could walk everyone in this lineup around the bases. There's no tomorrow. So I don't know. I always prefer the guys that Carrasco could get dinked and dunked and get 8 runs scored upon him. But if you're constantly putting guys on bases every inning, having 2 walks all the time, it's all you're doing is increasing the plate appearance expectation of all the guys in the lineup. And every at bat that people have, there's guys on base, which makes them even more valuable than the pitchers that are bad, but maybe don't put on as many base runners. You understand what I'm saying? I don't view Mackenzie Gore as that type of pitcher. I look at the Rangers and I go, oh, the Rangers could hit home runs off of Mackenzie Gore, but I'm not sure that Mackenzie Gore is bad enough in this matchup that he's putting on 5 batters on base and wild pitches and stuff like that. He could do bad just by, he makes 2 or 3 mistakes, and that's, he's given up 7 earned runs, but it's off of two bombs. But someone like Mike Soroka, it could be the 3rd inning and they're already taking him out at 92 pitches because come on, right? And then next thing you're dealing with the White Sox bullpen for 7 innings. I don't know. I look at the Twins and I look that they're mid-priced and I look at the stack page and it kind of agrees with me that from both a point per dollar and a raw projection and a ceiling projection, they're kind of the top of the Phillies against Tyler Anderson are right behind that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just get the sense of Tyler Anderson is not someone I typically roster as a pitcher. But it's also not typically the pitcher I typically play bats against particularly. I don't consider him a bad pitcher. He's like a soft thrown lefty that, you know, he gives up contact and bat. And if BABIP goes his way, he typically does very well. And if it doesn't, oh well.
Yeah, no, I agree. The Twins, I think, are one of the most appealing stacks today. I think the ceiling there is really good. They're a good combination of raw points, point per dollar, ceiling, reasonable ownership. I don't see Anderson getting blown up as often as Soroka, but I do like Philly today also. I think I like Houston maybe more than you do. Like, if there was one team today that I think is above the rest, I think it's Houston. But I think any of those top ones, I think, are definitely viable.
And I think under the radar, I mean, are people getting accustomed to the fact that the Diamondbacks are not bad?
I think so. I think people are of that impression now, and they're not bad. They're a pretty good offense. They're in a decent enough spot today. Like, the Diamondbacks are in that top tier for me.
I just think people are not used to in DFS going, yeah, the same prices that I'd be paying for Schwarber and Harper and Trey Turner, I'm paying for like Gurriel, Marte, and Christian Walker and Corbin Carroll. And like,
that's true.
Like these seem like 4K guys. It's like, oh yeah, yeah, average price, you know, 4,600. Once they hit that 5K price tag, like that mental thing of like, oh no, they need to be like real.
They need like to be real stars, yeah.
Right? They need to be real stars, right? Exactly, to get to that point. And I just don't think people view the Diamondbacks that way. Like, imagine telling someone, it's like, would you rather play Christian Walker or like Matt Olson?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, or Austin Riley or something like something, or the Dodgers, right? Do you want to play Ketel Marte or Freddie Freeman?
Like, yeah.
No, I'll play Freddie Freeman. Thank you very much. Like, right.
But I think there's a real case to actually play the Walker and the Marte and the Gurriel and the Diamondback stuff. Like, I don't think there's actually a lot of difference today between them and a team like the Dodgers.
And I think they're going to be really low owned.
Yeah.
Like, really. I mean, would I do that in the smaller field stuff? Maybe not. Maybe not. It depends. I mean, obviously, lineups, not players. So hitting props. Before we get out of here, everyone loves their home run props. You know, people love the home run. I don't know why. I prefer the props that are really boring, like under strikeouts for batters.
Well, that's because we like to make money, Blender.
Also, but the thing is, a lot of these, the hitter props, especially they're counting stats, but they're very small. Like, I'm talking like the strikeout ones, like those types of ones that rely on like the difference in lineup order could change a bet from being like plus EV decently to just awful, right?
Yeah.
Because the projected lineup is like, oh, okay, we have this guy projected to be batting eighth, right? And then he's like, oh, he's going to be batting sixth. It's like, well, then now you're like, that's two places in the order for, so he's getting a slightly higher plate appearance expectation, which is a slightly more chance of him striking out, which means your 12% edge on that strikeout under prop that you took 6 hours ago. Uh-oh. Right. So a lot of these, like, I don't, those types of props on the very small types of home runs, even some of the total bases for like the main players, like, I don't mind, because typically they're not moving around in the order, right? I'm not going to take a Bryce Harper prop and then find out he's batting eighth today. Like, if anything, it could only really go in my favor, right? It's like, oh, now he's batting, Oh, they're leading them off today for whatever reasons. Oh, even better, right? Depending on what I'm taking. So that's why a lot of the hitter stuff I don't really even like mess with until, you know, 3 or 4 o'clock in the day. But understand that if the projected lineups are as what we think they are, you're going to get a lot better prices earlier in the day. So do you have any give the people a nibble on the bat hitting projections, any hitting props that are still of value? I mean, they're going to be a lot of value today. You could go ham. I mean, right now on my screen, over 10% edge, I have like 130 of them, but right. I mean, I haven't taken them yet, but I mean, so it's like potentially, maybe not an under strikeout prop or anything like that. So something a little bit more sexy for the audience.
I mean, the sexy stuff usually doesn't have good odds. Like the hitter prop that I like the most today is Jorge Mateo under half a hit plus 155. I think that's the best.
That goes with the theme of this show, Guardy. When people tune in and they're like, okay, I'm getting my props, right? I'm getting my props, and they don't even like the pitching. Like, I don't like rooting for pitching. I like rooting for hitting, right? And it's like you're expected to hear it. Like, look at who's on the slate. We got Acuna, we got Mookie Betts, we got Mike Trout here, right? Mike Trout's leading off. We got Jordan Alvarez. We got all these people. Look, oh, Corey Seager's in play today.
I don't think
today.
I have ever in my life bet a single over on any of the players you just mentioned. I don't think right. One time.
Right. But that's people tune in and you're like, okay, what does Cardi have to say? It's like, you know what? I like Jorge Mateo's under half a hit. Right.
It's like, listen, you don't.
What?
I mean, maybe it's not as fun to follow, but if you like to win and make money, those are the kind of plays that you're going to win with. Like, it's, you know, sad to say, but you know, you're not making money betting Ronald Acuna over. I mean, this year, actually, maybe Acuna's odds have gotten a little bit better, but just because he's off such a slow start. But like, you're not betting star overs and winning money in the long term. You're just not.
Right, especially guys like Aaron Judge. Like,
yeah,
Aaron Judge under.
Aaron Judge to hit a home run plus 120. Like, no, thank you. No,
the only guy this year that the books didn't adjust well to, for whatever reason, is Mike Trout.
Yeah, Trout, there was a lot of Trout value early the first couple weeks of the year, for sure.
Right, like plus 350 is when, like, you should definitely be better than 350, right? Yeah. Then they did 300, and that still was good. And now it's down to a level where...
Yeah, now he's more reasonable, but the first couple weeks, Trout was showing good value.
Right. But I do, the bat still has some home run stuff up here, like a bat favorite. These are the types of things that people look at and go, why? And it's also going to matter if he's even in the lineup, but like lefty on Cole Reagan's Dalton Varsho plus 875. People look at that and they go, that doesn't seem right. Right. But you have that in the bat assuming he bats seventh, right? These are the problems. Assuming he bats seventh and he's even in the, I mean, he may not even be in the order today, right? But a lot of times these lefty stuffs, right? A lot of times lefties on lefties, yes, that's a positive matchup for the pitcher overall, but it's also typically a power matchup for the batter. So, like, he'll strike. The batter will strike. The lefty-lefty matchup means that, on average, the batter will strike out more. But it also means that if they do make contact, they get a lot more power off the lefty based on how the pitch trajectory is. So, like, you wouldn't be taking the over 1.5 hits in these scenarios. But these home run props in these, like, Freddie Freeman versus a lefty, like, I see a lot in the bat, these high 8-1, 10-1 home run props in these like power hitting lefty versus opposing lefty. And I think a lot of people probably shy away from these.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I mean, no one wants to play that kind of thing, but that's, I mean, if there's one rule of betting that you should just ingrain in your head, the uglier it is, the more the public doesn't want to bet it, the more likely it is you probably should be betting it.
And also, it all depends on price,
right? But a lot of times those are the ones where the price is favorable on those ones because the books know people don't want to bet this, so they can get away with, you know, shading the line in the direction that people do want to bet to get more edge, and then you bet the other side and you wind up actually with the plus EV side.
Right. When you're sports betting, you're not taking what's the most probable, you're taking what's the most profitable.
100%.
Right. So, you know, I don't mind taking a good old Lars Nootbaar plus 1100 home run prop, and knowing that if he hits a home run once every 9 days, I'm profitable, right? I mean, at that point, right, I'm getting paid 11-1. I don't know if he's going to hit that home run today, but as long as they keep his number like that, and then he'll hit a home run or two days in a row, they'll knock his home run prop now down to like plus 675, and then you'll never bet it ever again. I mean, like, that's just kind of what happens.
Have you been betting walk props this year, hitter walk props? I found there's some good edge on those. Some of the lines are just weird. Like Luis Arraez pops a lot at like plus 350, something like that. Those I've found to be good where, you know, more likely than not to not walk, you know, but if, you know, he's going to draw a walk one every three times and we're getting paid, you know, plus 350, like you're getting good value.
Same thing for some of the stolen base props from lower in the order batters, where like sometimes the FanDuel will like plus 1600. It's like, sure, I'll take a shot on this. I mean, but it's mostly on the fact of like, it's a 38% strikeout. It's the Billy Hamilton type. It's like, you take a look at Bray and Rocio and you go, well, if this guy gets on base, he could absolutely steal. I mean, like, this guy could absolutely steal. The problem is that
he doesn't get on base very often. The bats seen value on him quite a bit this year on stolen bases.
Right. But the thing is that once it happens once, typically the books just over-adjust for the time. Joe Adell home run props were off for a while, just like Mike Trout ones. And now we saw Joe Adell just hit, three, four home runs in the past week or so. Like, if you were on board that, like, in the beginning, you're like, I don't know why I'm taking Joe Adell plus 750, plus 850, plus 800. You know, like, and like, he's not doing anything. And then next thing you know, you're taking him and win. And now you're profitable. And now now it's plus 550. And bye bye, Joe Adell. I'll see you later. Right. You're not going to get that anymore. Right. Because they're not going to adjust until it happens.
No, but that's the thing. And that's one of the good things about using projection systems is that you can get ahead of the books. You find those spots before it happens and the book adjusts. You find the spots that the books, you know, have a blind spot to. And, you know, throughout the year last year, I remember the one hitting angle that I love to take, the same one that we're on with Mateo today. Like, books like wouldn't know about it for a few days. You'd make the money on him. And then they'd adjust them, but then you find a new guy and they adjust them and you find a new guy. Like, it's betting is very much a game of adjustments.
People can find your bat projections here on RotoGrinders, rotogrinders.com/the-bat. It's fairly affordable. It's, in my opinion, too affordable, but if you want to come on board, just realize I'm most likely going to be getting the numbers better than you, because if I'm not gonna spend the time baking my own model and I'm gonna use yours, Derek, I'm gonna put in the work ethic to make sure that I'm awake at midnight or 1 a.m. when the overnights come out and get up a little bit earlier than you. Watching, you know, you're on that cover show at 9 o'clock, and I'm like, tis,
you got your stuff way before that. Yeah.
I look and I go, okay, what is Cardi going to say? It's like, okay, got that better price, got that at a better price, got that.
Jordan, believe it or not, if we do a show at 4 a.m., we're not going to get any viewers. So
that's right. I don't want you to do that. Cause no,
I know.
That means when I wake up at 7 a.m, that means everything will be gone.
That's why doing it the way you do it is the smart way, you know, get in early before the lines move, at least on the stuff that, you know, you can be reasonably certain about. Like the guys with the fluctuating batting orders, maybe you don't bet early, but a lot of the other stuff you should be. And
right, especially right strikeout props. Like if like yeah. Dude, that's like the biggest that the strikeout props are like the I would say the most liquidish market for MLB props. So like yeah, by this definitely. Time, I mean I'm like it's like noon now, Cardi. It's like I don't even if unless some new news comes out on someone's pitch count or something like some, you know, some person's on paternity leave that we didn't realize in the order, you know, some big star is out. Like you have to consider that most, maybe there's some value. I mean, we mentioned the Simeon Woods Richardson, but I think that's most of the value because Caesars just has not moved their number.
Yeah.
Compared to DraftKings and all the other slides. I mean, like when it's like minus 150 in one place and still minus 125. There could still be enough value there. Like I wouldn't be taking that at minus 150, especially when if you got it like last night or this morning, like you didn't get it last night. It wasn't up last night, but if you got it this morning at like minus 110, like
I think like you should MGM, just like, MGM opened like, it.
You're ducking it in the bathtub. You're opening up that vault like Scrooge McDuck. And instead of coins, you're just seeing CLV all over the place. And just like, like bathing in it. It's like that's the point. Like all you have to do is just beat that, and by the time you get to it, like last week, for instance, early last week, the Clark Schmidt number was the most nut. That I think that was I think that may have been the most I've ever gotten. So I when the line comes out, Derek,
I don't think I knew that. What? Yeah.
Now last week's Clark Schmidt projection, you had it like 5.14 or something like that. It opened at 7.5. And it was 7.5. The on FanDuel, it was 7.5. The under on 7.5 was plus 120.
Oh my God. How did I miss that?
By the time I hit that before I went to sleep, I wake up. The under 7.5 on FanDuel is like minus 198. Like it is going, like it closed. It literally closed at 5.5 with both sides being like minus 110. Right. And I got like under 7.5 at like plus 120. And I was scared about that because like, number one, I know the bat hates Clark Schmidt. Right. Because yeah. tends to be under. But not to that extent. I'm like, is the pitch count right? Like, no, you had him at like 90 something pitch. I mean, like, okay, I'm taking this for as much as they'll allow me overnight, which isn't that much. But yeah, to get and people, I'm waking up and like, when it was like under 5.5 at like plus 100, like, it was still showing as like a 10% edge.
Yeah.
So I'm like. And people are taking it and like, okay, I got the under 5, and it's like, no, I got under 7.5 with plus money. Like, how, like, to me, that you don't see those. It's never that.
It's never that extreme. No, that's crazy. Extreme. Yeah,
but that was because I something must be wrong. Why is it plus 120 on the under 7.5 for Clark? He was facing a shit team or something. Maybe the A's.
Still, I mean, it was Clark Schmidt is never a favorite to get 8 strikeouts. Sorry.
Right. And another one was Joe Ryan. Joe opened what I did. I know we're wrapping up, but just showing these are the little nuances of using Derek's bat projections as your source of truth, and then just going out into the marketplace and finding books and things that are just. Like, why is this so off? Joe Ryan on one book, like it, you had his projection at like 7-ish or something, 6.84, 7. Whatever, and his over under was 5.5, and it was like 5.5, but like minus 150 for the over, right? It was still profitable even at that, but there was one book that I don't know how mispriced. The over 6.5 and 7.5 and 8.5, where like I was get like one book had like over 6.5 at minus 120, like that was the current line, but the alt line at the other book had that at like plus 150, And then if you went to the next step, you had it like plus 400. So that's what I did. It's not only that your main number, like their main number was off. If you're taking the main number, it was way off, right? You're getting plus money, you know, over 5.5 at like minus 1/3, something like that. But the alt numbers were off. So you know what I did? I just laddered up all the alt, right? He didn't get the ninth strikeout. I lost the 8.5 bet. But I got the other one. But I mean, when you could get over 7.5 on a guy that you project for 7 strikeouts for like plus 450,
I'm like, that's insane.
The fun I have using your projections and hoping other people don't. I have to sell it here. I have to say, hey, this is what I use. Go do it and just try not to be as early as I am because it'll make it harder on me. But I have to tell you what I do. This is what I do, right? So, Cardi, anything else? Are you going to be on Crunch Time later today?
Yes, I'm on the one tonight.
Okie doke. So you'll be on. We got Grinders Live, 5 o'clock Eastern. That's immediately followed by Crunch Time. Roth will be on. There's really no weather situations. Really much to worry about today, I think. Obviously, hit that thumbs up button on your way out the door. Hit the notification bell to always know when I go live here in the morning, Monday through Friday, 11 o'clock Eastern. Talking about all things you're thinking about in Daily Fantasy, props and pick 'em on Roto Grinders today.